I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune, wearing your tricolour balaclava, is with us to answer your...
Yes. No context needed.
No context needed for that one at all whatsoever. Yeah. Is here to answer some of your questions. Right. Recently, my 9-year-old daughter has told me she's having these thoughts that bother her. After further discussion, she said she sometimes thinks about people killing themselves and it makes her feel very sad. I was shocked. I've no idea where this is coming from. She's normally a happy, outgoing child with lots of friends and is involved in different activities. We have not been exposed to any suicidal events and we haven't been talking about that kind of thing. She told me that these thoughts can happen at any time. They've even happened in school on a few occasions. She was tearful telling me about it and appeared anxious about it, sweaty palms and face when describing these events to me. I have reassured her as best I can and discussed coping mechanisms such as deep breaths and letting the thought pass as if it's a cloud. I've told her to talk to us any time and not to be worried. Frankly, I've no clue what to do next. Is this a phase? Do I need professional help for her? If so, where do I go? I'm playing it down currently and trying not to make a big deal about it. I hate seeing her upset over something she's no control over, and I'm terrified it will escalate and get out of hand altogether.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. So intrusive thoughts is really what we're describing here, which is an unwanted thought that comes into your mind. And it's often in contradiction to how you generally think yourself, you know, so it feels uncomfortable. And often people, especially children, will think they're bad for having the bad thought.
Yeah.
So it's the first thing you want to clarify for her is she is not bad for having a negative thought, if that's how she's experiencing it. These intrusive thoughts, and I mean, intrusive thoughts very often have an anxiety trigger. Okay, there has been something that's caused a worry and it's manifesting this way. But not always, Sean. It is not developmentally unusual for children to have intrusive thoughts in waves at different times. Mm. Often when they're dealing with quite a bit of change in their own development and, you know, they feel a little bit chaotic or disjointed or not quite sure who they are within themselves, and it can happen around then. And just then as they settle into their development, they can go. So they're not something to always panic about. I do want to emphasize that, and it is quite normal. This is quite a specific intrusive thought. It is about people killing themselves. And the reason I want to catch that is it seems recent, but it's there quite a bit and it's coming at her in different settings. I had an experience recently enough where a little book came into our house.
Yeah.
That's, you know, for the right age for my child, all of that. But, you know, just listening, a bit of reading aloud and reading ahead a couple of pages, which is no harm to do, especially when you hear this story. There was a number of references in the book to suicide, in using different types of language for it, like casual language as well. And so hearing it, I was able to kind of catch it and say, oh, hang on, do we know what this is? And talk it through. Is it possible she's read a lot of preteen writing? Does deal with quite pseudo-adult material. It could be a little character's parent or someone they know, but the theme can be dropped in there, but maybe not fully explored. And so a child is left with this notion or an idea without actually understanding it or have thought or processed it through. And so it might be worth just exploring with her, you know, where this idea has come from. Has she ever heard it before or read it or seen it anywhere? And she's not in trouble for seeing or reading something that, you know, she didn't understand. But it might give you some context to this because it is so specific. Now, look, I'm going to say all of that, but equally it might be she's going, no, it's just something in my head. Just pay attention to what she might be reading, watching, or even observing if she's on any kind of online platforms. Mm. You just don't know what they're exposed to there. So just catching it. The other things you're doing, like this idea, let the thought pass as if it's a cloud. That's lovely. But with an intrusive thought, the cloud keeps circling back.
Yes, it's a big black cloud.
You know, it's hard. It might be something you can say to her that when she has a thought, catch it And then immediately, is there evidence for this thought? So is there something that makes me think this could be real? If the answer is yes, you go to an adult and you name for her who in school, who at home she can go to talk it through, and the adult will help you make sense. And if there's no evidence, we let it go. There's your cloud bit. Mm. But I think sometimes with an intrusive thought, it's not as easy as just letting it go. So you need to give her, catch it. Is there evidence? If there is, go and talk to somebody about it so she's not alone with it. Outside of that, I would be saying, validate her. Like, don't say, don't be thinking about things like that. That's our temptation as parents, isn't it? Of course. You do want to reassure her she's not bad for having the bad thought, as I said. But you also want to emphasize thoughts are not actions. Mm-hmm. So having the thought doesn't make it real. It's just something in her head and she can move it on and you'll help her do that. If it was to escalate, if it was to linger for a number of months, you know, if you're looking at, I don't know how long it's there at the moment before writing to us, but if it was there 3-4 months, sure, you might want to think about bringing her to child psychologist, child psychotherapist, who could help her very specifically to explore, process and work it through. In the meantime, at home, I think it's worth increasing what I'm going to call story play. It helps kids to develop a story or a narrative around lots of different thoughts. And that could also help her then learn ways of taking this thought and storying it to work it through. There's lots of ways you could do story cubes, you know, those little boxes of dice that have the symbols and pictures on every side and you roll them and whatever way they land, you make up a story. Also, I have a lovely thing at home called, I use it in work in the clinic as well, called Chat Mallows. And it's the same idea, story cubes, but it comes with these sticks and you slide them on as if they were marshmallows around a campfire Chat Mallows. And as you sit there together, and there is a little glowy fire thing that comes with it. It's really cute, actually. Yeah. And that you slide your marshmallow cubes on and you talk about it and do the story play is a really good way to help move thoughts through in a symbolic way. And again, I would increase sensory play, even though she's 9, thinking slime, sand, water, bubbles, Play-Doh, whatever you could, baking, if she would do that with you, anything that has a sensory rich experience, it helps take her out of her head and pulls her down into those now moments in her body using touch and sensory tactile experience. It just helps get kids out of those ruminating thoughts.
Yeah. So it would be useful to ask her, if you like, what she thinks about the thoughts.
Oh, yeah. And absolutely. And to say, well, that's a thought, but how much, I'd like to know how much detail is in her thought. Like, what is she picturing? And is it a specific person she worries about? Is it herself? Is it someone else? If you were to say, OK, you're having this thought, can you tell me the story of the thought? And just what's happening in the thought? What do you see? Who's there? In as much detail as you can get. And then you can help break it down and reassure her into pieces. But you're trying to get her to interweave it with that story to help get it out of her and share it with you. So it's not something she's holding. And also with intrusive thoughts, because they're often things that children would never say to somebody in real life, but they have the thought. So it can be things about bodies, it can be about appearance, and they might feel quite shamed about it. So not want to tell you what the thought is because they don't want to cause offense. So really emphasize to her, you won't offend me if the thought is about me or anybody else we know. It's important that you share it with me.
Yeah, because you could see how, like when, like, because I know from my own kids, when they're kind of 12, 13, they will say, oh my God, I wanted to kill myself. Yeah. You know, but they're not really thinking what that means.
Absolutely.
I mean, they were extremely embarrassed, but maybe a sensitive and thoughtful 9-year-old hears that phrase and then goes, God, that's what it means. Why would anyone do that?
You're absolutely right. And it may be the first time that's occurred to her as a concept. And she's like, I didn't know this was a thing. And now I can't stop thinking about it. So helping her to understand. And I always think when we do talk about complex topics like suicide with children, and if they bring it up, we do need to help them understand what it is they're thinking about, is that we do it in a very kind, gentle, non-judgmental, non-shaming, non-blaming way. But we talk about how, you know, sometimes people get really lost in their feelings and they don't think there's any way out. And we like to think and say that there's always someone you can talk to and go to, but nobody does this to cause anyone any pain or harm.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So helping her to understand the concept in a child appropriate way. But I would be curious. Now, not worried or concerned, but curious as to where the thought originated from.
Yeah. My five-year-old son is in junior infants. Most days he comes home from school upset because the other children do not let him play with them. He said the children in his class are calling him Brownie because we're from India, and he seems to think that is why he's being called names. The school and his teacher are aware of the issue, and as far as I know, they've spoken to the class about the name calling, but it hasn't made any difference. How do we make him feel comfortable going to school if this name calling persists? We don't want him to feel isolated or sad.
This makes me feel sad. It's appalling. And a couple of things like this, and I don't, you know, we don't know what the school did, but the idea that the school had a chat about name calling, and that is an inadequate response from the school. Yeah. This is happening in school, in a classroom environment, and is affecting this child's capacity to go to school and how they feel about school. So I would request a meeting, a sit down in person meeting with the school, be that the principal, be it their child's teacher, maybe if there's a classroom assistant or resource teacher that's attached to the classroom as well. Sit down meeting to address this, because not just chastising kids for name calling. Of course, kids shouldn't call names at all, and that will be said to them. But this is very specific. Mm. And so education is needed. And I think that's something that the school are responsible for. So you could, I mean, look, the schools are closing Friday, but it's no harm to send an email now saying you're requesting the meeting for early January and then follow up on the 5th of January with what date are we meeting? I would take this very seriously. These are small children. Children saying names, really what they're doing is they're naming difference.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Children are very curious little beings. You know, they don't know any better, especially not 5 years old and junior infants, but they can learn better. They can learn boundaries. They can learn how to treat each other with respect, but they do need to be guided and taught. Some of that is going to come down, a large part of it, to the school, because that's where it's happening. However, as parents, a bit of a shout out to everybody.
Yeah,
talk to your children about this. You know, like, this is not okay. And I think we do, as parents, need to take collective responsibility for making sure our children are better informed how to behave towards each other. So I emphasize that, because I think for the parent writing into us, I would always also with him listen for any name he mentions, like, oh, I played with so and so, or I kicked a ball around with so and so. If there's a name, see if you could contact that parent and either arrange a little play meetup in a park or have that child over, whatever feels most comfortable for 5 year olds. You know, it might be easier meet in a neutral venue and play for a little while and then everyone go their way. But that could really be helpful. The other thing is, and he's five, but help him advocate for himself. Because if a little friend says, why is your skin brown and mine isn't? It might help to give him an answer to that.
Yeah.
You know, well, there's a thing called melanin and it changes the color of our skin. If you have lots, it's dark. And if you don't, you're not, isn't. But we're all the same on the inside. And then also empower him through role play. And I think you could role play with him saying, okay, I'll be you. You be the kid saying the name calling, and then you're modeling the response for him to do, and then switch and have him model back to you what he could say. And do this a lot over the holiday period, so that when he goes back to school, he's rehearsed it, and it's in him to say, that name is mean, I don't like it, stop.
Yeah.
And if somebody doesn't stop, then he goes to the teacher. But I do want to emphasize, Sean, it is not a five-year-old's responsibility to educate our children about tolerance and inclusion.
No.
That is us as parents and as educators.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of the parents would be appalled if they knew their kids were saying
that. Absolutely. And it could come from somewhere very innocent in school,
of course,
with
five.
A child simply saying something. But if it's not dealt with properly, that catches on. And that's really hurtful.
Yeah. My 14-year-old son has recently started a relationship with a 15-year-old girl in the year ahead of him. They went to the same primary school in a rural area, so I know her parents well. Last week, her mother texted me acknowledging that they were dating and then said, "You don't need to worry. Rosie is on the pill." Rosie is not her real name, I need to point out. I was shocked by this message. It never even dawned on me that they would be having sex, and I certainly would not be encouraging it at such a young age. I have not responded to the text message, but I would like to. I suppose I need to have a proper conversation with my son about sex, but I don't know how to broach it. I personally feel he's not emotionally ready to have sex, but I don't want to be naive either. Any advice on how to broach the topic with this woman and also my son?
I mean, I feel like I'm giving lots of public service announcements today, Sean. Yes. But also, you know, just as we're going to educate our five-year-olds about tolerance and inclusion, do not give any rights or anything in your house to someone else's teenager without running it by them. Okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Without running by their parent, I should say. So like if your daughter has a boyfriend and you're okay with them being alone in her bedroom, don't presume the parent of the other teenager is okay with that.
Yeah.
Run it by them. Okay.
Yeah.
For this parent, you absolutely need to talk to your son about sex. Certainly. Protection, safe sex, you know, STIs, pregnancy, the whole works about sex, and that sex is for pleasure and there is mutual enjoyment, all of those aspects. I think we can sometimes talk to kids about sex in a way that we're really cautioning.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't align with them saying, but it feels really good. So you didn't include that bit. So I don't think you know everything.
Mm.
So talk to them quite openly, but also talk to him about boundaries, about consent, about ensuring there's consent, that you check before, during, that consent is ongoing and active. That's a really important conversation. He's 14, whether he had a girlfriend or not. I would be saying you need to have that conversation with him and to yeah. have had it. I do presume, I'm going to make a presumption, there's been some conversation about sex and bodies and life and all of that up to this point.
Yeah.
And now we're bringing it into more the relationship world yeah. because
now,
he has
one. It was
one.
Theoretical probably up to
exactly,
this point.
Exactly, exactly. Now it's a bit real. And it's a bit real for everybody. I do think you need to structure the conversation in a way that won't absolutely mortify him. Some mortification is going to be unavoidable, but
yeah,
you don't want
course.
To absolutely mortify him. A drive side by side in the car is often the best way to do it. You know, at least stop and get an ice cream or a bag of chips or something while you're out. But going for a drive and saying, look, I do want to talk to you about this. Acknowledging straight away, you probably don't want me to talk to you about this, but it is happening. So let's the two of us get through this with as least embarrassment possible. Listen as much as you talk. Unless he goes completely mute on you and says nothing. And then you will have to do the talking. Check what he knows. Check where they're at. I wouldn't presume, just because they're 14 and 15, that they are in a sexual relationship.
Yeah.
I wouldn't presume because Rosie, quote unquote, her mom has said she's on the pill. That may have been, oh, I just want to open the conversation and I'm reassuring you. But it doesn't mean they are having sex now, Sean.
Well, Rosie could be on the pill for other reasons
absolutely
rather than necessarily
what I'm thinking.
Strictly
that's
contraceptive
exactly
ones. That would imply if she's taking contraception, Rosie might also have a venue, if you know what
that's
I mean.
That's the conversation that has to happen. So you do want to tell him he's your son. You can say, I want to talk to you about all of this, but I'm also telling you, I believe you are too young to have sex. You are below the legal age to have sex and it is worth waiting. You are not ready for this, but you can talk to me if it happens or is going to happen. You can talk to me. Even though I think you're too young, you can still come and talk to me. So you're leaving the door of communication open, but you are stating your boundaries quite clear with him. That's not a one-off conversation with your son. That's something you're going to come back to. With the other mother, my preference would be to call her. I know a text has been sent and someone might be more comfortable texting back. I would prefer to call the other, especially because you say you've known her for years because the kids have grown up together. So you call her or text her, whatever you're going to do, but open with what the rules are in your house.
Yeah.
Don't get into judging her house. Say, look, your daughter, of course, is welcome in our house. Just so you know, in our house, they will not be allowed in his bedroom. The room they're in will have the door open. It will be our family sitting room. She's welcome to stay for dinner. She's welcome here, but these are the rules. And then you can say, I am requesting that when my son is in your house, that you don't allow him in your daughter's bedroom with the door closed.
Okay, yeah.
And you can say that because he's your son.
Yes, of course.
So you're not saying, I'm judging you, but you're saying, I would prefer, this is what we want in our house. And you can say, I think, you know, it's in a first relationship together and this is all very new. It's new for us as parents as well, but we don't believe that they're ready for a sexual relationship and we will be actively discouraging it.
Mm. If Rosie's pill-providing mother then gets the hump and goes, well, we've different rules in our house.
Then your son, Rosie, is welcome in your house, but he is not allowed to go to her house.
Yeah.
It's tricky though, Sean.
Yeah.
It's really
that's
tricky.
It's really tricky. Yeah.
But I think that's all we, but that, you know, even if they're not in a relationship, that stands with our children no matter what, that part of you growing up is teaching them that families all operate differently and there are different rules in each different house, and what is and isn't allowed here will be different in your friends' houses. So sometimes if we feel that you won't be as safe as we would like you to be, we won't be allowing you go to someone's house, but your friends are always welcome here so long as our rules are followed.
Yeah, indeed. Joanna, thanks a million as ever. Next week, I think today week is Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve, that's right.
So that will be, we will have a special Christmas Eve show, but that will be a pre-recorded show, though it will feature Joanna tackling some more Christmassy questions from parents. In the meantime, happy Christmas
and
to you,
likewise,
Joanna.
And thanks, to everyone listening.
And thanks a million for all your sage advice during the course of the year. Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.